Welcome to the American Cafe. I'm your host, Ira Melman. A U.S. spacecraft is approaching its target, a completely different target.
This is the first time in more than 57 years of space exploration that we've had a spacecraft targeted to orbit any two extraterrestrial destinations.
Elizabeth Lee with the story of the mission of the Dawn spacecraft. From New York City, Carolyn Weber is here to tell us about beauty in the city's subway system.
When I'm stressed, I look at the subway art. I love the colors. Where I live, they have a mosaic of a man and a woman like floating across water, and it's beautiful. It's just beautiful to have art everywhere.
And art in the form of music is being composed and performed by a woman as comfortable with her computer as she is with her cello.
I think that technology has really allowed my music to happen, because without it, I wouldn't have had these tools to create it.
Bernard Chessman pays us a visit with the story of Zoe Keating's one-woman orchestra. All of that and more on this week's American Cafe. NASA's Dawn spacecraft will soon reach the dwarf planet Ceres. Once it starts orbiting Ceres, Dawn will gather clues about how it evolved and whether this icy body may have once had conditions conducive to supporting life. Elizabeth Lee reports from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Los Angeles.
2, main engine start. 1. 0 and liftoff of the Delta II rocket with Dawn.
Dawn left Earth more than 7 years ago on a course to explore two alien worlds in the solar system.
This is the first time in more than 57 years of space exploration that we've had a spacecraft targeted to orbit any two extraterrestrial destinations.
The two destinations are Vesta and Ceres in the main asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. Back at the Dawn Mission Control Center, the flight team sends second-by-second instructions to the spacecraft, directing its every move, including what photographs it takes. Scientists believe the dwarf planet is made of rock covered with a mantle of ice. Once the spacecraft enters its orbit in March, it will take images and make a comprehensive map of this alien world. Dawn will examine Ceres' composition to see how its surface has evolved and whether it could have been conducive to life, says Carol Raymond, the mission's deputy principal investigator.
One of the interests in bodies like Ceres and other icy bodies in the outer solar system is that when objects like that impacted the terrestrial planets, they brought a lot of water with them. And so there's a very vigorous debate at the current time as to whether wet asteroids like Ceres, and we know there are other wet asteroids in the outer edge of the main belt, whether they were the dominant source of water in the Earth's ocean.
Earlier in its mission, Dawn made an unexpected discovery on the protoplanet Vesta.
Quite to the surprise of the team, that instead of being bone dry, which we expected, there were patches of the surface of Vesta that showed significant amounts of water bound in the rocks, and possibly even free water that could have flowed on the surface in the past.
Raymond says if Earth's water came from wet worlds like Ceres, then life could have come with them as well. If Dawn finds the environment on Ceres could be conducive to life, the finding may spur further explorations with the right types of instruments to test that hypothesis. As for Dawn, it will gather information on Ceres until the summer of 2016. Then it will continue to orbit the dwarf planet indefinitely. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
Pilots of the solar plane that already set records flying without a drop of fuel are close to making their first attempt to fly the craft around the globe. They plan to do it in 25 flying days over a 5-month period. VOA's George Pudich is here in the cafe with the story.
This was not the first incident of a flying machine on the grounds of the White House. In September 1994, a pilot crashed a small Cessna airplane onto the South Lawn, prompting re-evaluation of security procedures. But the latest incident again highlighted the increased vulnerability of the traditional home of the U.S. presidents. thanks to advances in cheap electronics, lightweight materials, and mechanical parts, drones are now available to anyone. The Federal Aviation Administration, which regulates U.S. airspace, limits the flights of drones operated by hobbyists to a height of about 120 meters and within sight of the operator. But modern drones can be pre-programmed to fly automatically along so-called waypoints. According to Illinois Institute of Technology Robotics Lab Associate Professor Matthew Spenko, some manufacturers program their drones so they cannot be operated in certain areas, but the system is not immune to hacking.
If you're smart enough and you know what you're doing, you can always override that.
Spenko says quadcopters can carry up to 6 kilograms of payload. The best among them can stay airborne for 25 minutes and fly as fast as 10 meters per second. University of Nebraska journalism professor Matthew Waite studies how drones can be used to report news. He says Monday's incident may have some bad consequences.
I've been saying for years that it's going to take one idiot doing something stupid to trigger a lot of bad policy, and I'm afraid that we may have found our idiot.
Waite says the White House is well protected, but a motivated person can still create a lot of chaos.
If somebody wants to cause harm and havoc with a device and some explosives, there's very little to stop them. And that's just kind of the way of the world.
The Secret Service does not have a reliable system to identify and disable drones. After the latest incident, Waite says the agency will no doubt reconsider its options, but he thinks the danger from drones is small.
Could you do damage with it? Absolutely. Are you going to level a building with it? No, probably not. So, you know, there's a threat here, but it's, you know, in the grand scheme of other threats, I think it's pretty low.
Much as other modern devices, drones are here to stay, so governments and regulators will have to come up with comprehensive regulations to control their use. In the meantime, private companies are already seeing the potential for a lucrative business, devices that protect us from drones. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Millions of New Yorkers and visitors ride the New York City subway and commuter trains each day. Along the way, they encounter one of the most far-flung public art collections in the world. VOA's Carolyn Weaver has more.
It's sometimes called New York's Underground Art Museum. More than 250 works in subway and rail stations meant to brighten everyone's ride around the city. There's the vast ceiling mural of the night sky in place for a century at Grand Central Terminal. And in the nearby Grand Central Market, a tree-inspired chandelier glittering with ice-like crystals. Artists include those still emerging and the long famous. Roy Lichtenstein's pop art porcelain enamel mural at Times Square and Saul Lewitt's vibrantly colored whirls and twirls at Columbus Circle. Sandra Bloodworth has directed the Metropolitan Transportation Authority's arts program since it began in 1985.
But actually, it really began much earlier when the subway was founded in 1904. A percentage, if you will, of money had been set aside to create a special ornamentation within the system in order to make the place this very special place that people would want to use.
For the last 30 years, artists have been commissioned to make works that relate to city life or the neighborhood where the station is located. There are beach scenes in stations near the Atlantic Ocean and native plants and flowers in a garden scene in Brooklyn. Wildlife mosaics and fossil-like bronze plaques greet visitors arriving at the subway station next to the American Museum of Natural History. Small bulbous creatures made by sculptor Tom Otterness whimsically populate another station. At Times Square, Jane Dixon's mosaics of the revelers evoke New Year's Eve celebrants. Commuter Tanya Peer in her red coat almost looks like part of the art.
When I'm stressed, I look at the subway art. I love the colors. Where I live, they have a mosaic of a man and a woman like floating across water, and it's beautiful. It's just beautiful to have art everywhere.
Not far away, Colombian tourist Alejandra Acosta stopped to photograph a glass mosaic mural by the late African-American artist Jacob Lawrence.
I think it's nice when you see these kind of things that catch your eye when you're walking in spaces like the subway stations that seem to be a little bit dull. They don't have a lot of decoration.
Downtown at the new Fulton Center subway hub, Bloodworth says the MTA's newest major work, its crowning piece of art, is the massive sky reflector net, designed by James Carpenter with Grimshaw Architects and Arup.
Together they've created this work of art that brings light into the station. As Jamie Carpenter says, the sky is folded onto the sky reflector and down onto the people as they travel through the station.
Even on gray winter days, the piece funnels life into otherwise dreary passages, something that could be said, in fact, about all the works in New York's Underground Art Museum. Carolyn Weaver, VOA News, New York.
Avant-garde cellist Zoe Keating has a unique sound fusing music with technology. VOA's Bernard Schussman caught up with the musical artist at the Subculture Club in New York City, and he's here with this report.
Zoe Keating is a talented and engaging musician. Originally from Northern California, Keating struggled to overcome a performer's nightmare.
But I really wanted to be a classical cellist, and I had one big problem, which was that I had terrible stage fright. In that whenever I would perform in front of someone, I would just totally fall to pieces, and my hands would shake, and I'd drop the bow.
Keating realized her problem only happened when she played classical music. When she improvised or played in a rock band, her stage fright disappeared. Before performing full-time, she earned her living as a computer programmer, a skill she used to create a musical repertoire that is technologically integrated. She produces a symphony of sounds with just one instrument, her cello, and an Apple computer.
And what I do is I take a layer of cello, you play it, record it, play another layer, play another layer, play another layer. And then I use my feet to control the computer to play those layers back at different times, or play them backwards, or chop them up, and do it all on the fly on stage. My feet are usually tapping a pedal, which is, I have a MIDI controller on the right-hand side. And the MIDI controller sends different commands to the computer that all the things that you might normally do with your hands on a computer. So I think that technology has really allowed my music to happen, because without it, I wouldn't have had these tools to create it.
Keating's music has been used on TV and movie soundtracks, like the TV hit Breaking Bad and the film The Sacred Life of Bees. Less structured are her improvisation and composition for live audiences. They love it, and her.
I think she's an incredible innovator, and she's using a classical format, but in her own unique way, and her compositions are very compelling.
I love cello to begin with, and when I heard her music and everything, I was like fascinated. I couldn't believe that she does everything.
She's a musician that's brilliant, and then someone who understands the technology in a way that a lot of people never actually achieve.
And it all began when Keating was just 8 years old, and her music teacher picked her to play the cello because she was the tallest kid in the class. Now Keating is reaching musical heights undreamed of when she was a child and had no idea what a cello was. Bernard Schussman, VOA News, at the Subculture Club, New York.
The pursuit of happiness is so important, America's founding fathers put it in the Declaration of Independence. Ask any zookeeper and they'll tell you animals aren't so different. They need enrichment just like humans. So painting, even music, are part of the Smithsonian National Zoo's program to keep the animals happy. VOA's June So met with some animal artists in the National Zoo in Washington, and Faith Lapidus narrates the story.
Francois began his artistic career 2 years ago. The sloth bear has a unique way to paint, using his breath. His keeper, Stacy Tavallario, says although it may look odd, it's actually a very natural behavior.
They've got big, big lungs, and they can suck things up, and then in the same breath, they can exhale a huge amount of air. So we took this natural behavior of the exhale, we stuffed up one of those tubes full of paint, and we asked him to exhale through it, and that expels all of the paint onto the canvas, making these really cool paintings.
Animal artists come in all shapes and sizes at the Smithsonian's National Zoo. They use a variety of techniques to create masterpieces with non-toxic, water-based paint. Many use their paws or claws. Apes, like this orangutan, pick up a brush, and others, like this gorilla, carefully choose colors for their canvas. But like humans, not every animal wants to paint, says small mammals keeper Kenton Kearns.
Painting is absolutely a choice. So it's very clear to us if an animal does not want to do a painting session, and if that's the case, we'll stop it right away. We'll choose another animal and give them the opportunity to do it.
Francois! Dabalario says 24-year-old Francois seems to enjoy expressing his inner artist.
When I set up the materials for a painting activity, he comes and sits next to them and waits until we're ready to start painting. He does that every time. I also see where his eyes go, that he does see the paint come out of the tube and land on the canvas.
Music is also part of the Arts Enrichment Program. Dabalario, who's the zoo's Enrichment and Training Committee chair, says physically and mentally stimulating activities are an integral part of the daily care. Trainers have a lot of tools, everything from tablet computers to toys in the enclosures. The program offers other benefits as well, says Kearns.
Every interaction between keeper staff and their animals creates some sort of bond. And hopefully, especially with enrichment sessions like this, it creates a stronger bond.
The one-of-a-kind works of art created by the animals are popular with zoo visitors and are sold at the zoo's fundraising events. For producer June So, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News, Washington.
College tuitions and student debt in the United States have increased at a rapid pace in the past 20 years, raising serious questions about whether a student loan crisis could be brewing here. Some, including President Barack Obama, believe the solution is to provide free community college education for students who qualify. But some say throwing more money to fix the problem is not the answer. Millar Sega from VOA explains.
Higher learning. It's an expensive but necessary proposition in the 21st century job market. But with tuition rates rising at a record pace, many Americans simply can't afford it. Justin Mills enrolled at a two-year community college in Maryland for about a third of the cost of a typical private college education.
The cost of tuition is probably the main reason why people don't enroll in the first place, because they are worried about coming out of it in debt, in heavy student debt.
In his annual State of the Union address, President Barack Obama said not only does that hurt U.S. competitiveness, it's also unfair.
And that's why I'm sending this Congress a bold new plan to lower the cost of community college to zero.
The president's plan would eliminate tuition fees at two-year community colleges for students with at least a 2.5 grade point average. But with an estimated price tag of more than $60 billion over 10 years, it's unlikely to pass in the Republican-controlled Congress. It's not just politics, though. Some say Mr. Obama's plan uses a sledgehammer where a chisel might do. Matthew Chingos is head of education policy research at the Brookings Institution.
It's going to spread resources out over a large number of students, and as a result, not be generous enough for people who need the help and be too generous for people who don't need the help.
In the past 20 years, the amount of money borrowed by American students to pay for a college education has quadrupled. At more than $1.2 trillion, it's bigger than the country's total credit card debt. Despite the higher costs, Chingo's research shows the returns, more job opportunities and higher incomes, still outweigh the initial investment. A better solution, he says, is to expand existing financial aid programs.
Comes back to this idea of should the policy be focused on people who need it the most, need the help the most, whose behavior is most likely to be affected, or should we spread the same resources out over a much broader group of people?
Critics say the president's plan would not only mean big tax hikes for higher income earners, it would also eliminate tax breaks for those saving money for education. But those in favor say the plan would more than pay for itself, reducing high school dropout rates and improving U.S. competitiveness abroad. While unlikely to pass, Chingo says the proposal is helpful if it opens up discussion on the true cost of education and if it leads to action that ensures all Americans can afford it. Millar Sega, VOA News, Washington.
As oil prices have fallen over the past several months, drilling operations have slowed in some parts of the United States, including Texas, the state that surpasses all others in energy production. The Lone Star State's energy output has been boosted in recent years by development of resources trapped deep below ground in the Eagle Ford Shale Deposit, which stretches across the South Central Texas area. As VOA's Greg Flakus reports from Karn City, Texas, the drop in oil prices has created concerns, but so far has had little impact on the region's prosperity.
There's a lot of heavy traffic now in this once quiet rural area of South Texas. Thanks to drilling in the Eagle Ford Shale Deposit, towns like Kennedy are booming with new bars, restaurants, and shopping centers. In Panna Maria, established by Polish immigrants in the middle of the 19th century, Mark Mika has built a new house with money oil companies paid him to drill on his land.
It's been great for me. It's been great for a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of millionaires in this county.
But the falling price of oil has caused a slowdown in development of new projects. Helen Hernandez processes project permits for Karnes County.
They do like a prediction of how many wells they're going to drill for this year. They've cut those in half.
That worries oil field worker Travis Jackson.
For everybody else, gas prices are great. You know, my dad's happy about it, for one. But for us, that means no work, you know, no money.
Some companies have started laying off workers, but those with lower cost operations remain active. Truck driver Ronald Thomas says he's seen no slowdown where he works.
I'm thankful that I'm still gainfully employed and we're busy. I'm pretty steady here. All the way
up here. Omar Garcia is president and CEO of the South Texas Energy and Economic Roundtable, which represents companies working in the Eagle Ford Shale region.
These companies are not going to walk away from this billion-dollar investment. There will continue to be exploration. There will continue to be jobs in South Texas. At what level? It all depends on the price of oil this year.
Garcia says energy development in the Eagle Ford region is so recent that people here have never experienced a big price decline.
This is the first time that this area has had to deal with the oil prices. You know, other parts of the country, other parts of Texas have seen this before.
He says this region went 20 years without growth before the shale boom, which last year alone had an economic impact of $87 billion, supporting 150,000 jobs. Oil company officials expect crude oil prices to stabilize by summer, and local business owners and county officials hope they're right.
People here remain optimistic that the oil price will improve in the months ahead and that this boom will continue. Greg Flakus, VOA News, Karn City, Texas.
That's all the time we have for this week's show. Our thanks to executive producer Bob Doty. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at americancafe@voanews.com. And you can also give us a telephone call. Dial the international code, then 1 for the United States, followed by 202-205-9942. When you hear the VOA ID, press 05 and then leave your questions or your comments. For all the people here at VOA, I'm Ira Melman. We'll see you next time on American Cafe.